Hi, and welcome along to Object Disoriented Podcast, a podcast about people and technologies and people in technologies. In each episode, we're going to take you behind the scenes of the world of high tech. We're going to invite our friends, software engineers and developers, who are going to talk about their career journey, their current projects, and how they're changing the world using technologies.
We will take you through those amazingly interesting topics, from AI to DevOps, cybersecurity, and even gaming. We will take those complex manner and make it accessible to everyone. So even if you're a senior or a junior, you must take advantage of this insider's view to the tech industry. So please join us. I'm Michal, I'm a software developer in Infinity Labs.
And I'm Timo, I'm also a software developer in Infinity Labs R&D. And today we have Nathan. Hi, Nathan.
Hello, guys.
Hey.
Nathan is our special guest. He is engineer from Meta, and today we would be happy to hear his career journey and how he is fulfilling his career in such a big, fantastic company as Meta. So, Nathan. How are you doing?
Good. Good. Very excited.
Amazing. Can you tell us a bit about yourself, where you're coming from?
Sure. So I'm Nathan. I did Aliyah to Israel it's already 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I came to Masa actually 6 years ago on Masa program in IONOT. And Masa program was about Java programming, but it was super basic. Afterwards, during Masa program, I had internship. Mm-hmm. In a SAP company, probably mm-hmm. SAP.
As what role?
As a data researcher. Mm. I was in innovation team.
Okay, and were you a software developer before making Aliyah?
No. So, I moved from Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I was just graduated. Mm-hmm. I have master's degree in control and management in technical systems, mm-hmm. but it's less about computer science. It's some fields that's related to computer science, but it's more about math and some things that I don't know yet.
So the internship itself wasn't connected to
It was a program like for Java development, like from the scratch, so mm-hmm. it was super basic, and then everyone did interviews to different companies, and probably most of us had internship not related to Java or to previous experience.
And how did you get in the world of high tech?
Yeah, so eventually I didn't get an offer after my internship, but I even had few interviews, but it was a bit messy because mm-hmm. I tried to apply to machine learning or data scientist and I didn't have any knowledge and experience.
And it wasn't because of the language barrier?
No, it wasn't because of language barrier, it just wasn't because of experience barrier. Mm-hmm. Some guy from Japan told me that there is Infinity Labs courses where you can study and then you get a job, a contract, and they help you, etc. So I applied, decided, okay, I'll spend my time. It could be tough, but it's better than work on such jobs like waitress or movers or I finished Ulpan in September, and in October I already started to study in Infinity Labs. Mm-hmm. People in my group, all of them had a different level of knowledge. Some of them came with some experience, so they did everything fast. Some of them came with less experience and it took time, and I guess first months for me it was hard, but afterwards everyone started to be at same level, mm-hmm. and in a few months it even started to be simple for me, not for everyone, but yeah, it was pretty funny. I got a few friends, a good friends, we still friends.
I know some of them.
This was my like entry point to Israel, real entry point to Israel high tech. After 5 months, I guess, I get a contract. Mm-hmm. After one extra month, so in total, after 6 months, I started my first job in Symbionix. Mm-hmm.
What was the product? What were you doing?
Yeah, okay, so first, what is Symbionix? It's a good company which does simulators for doctors. So for surgeries, for aerial hardware, which simulates, for example, human body or just a leg or hand or head. and a few monitors which simulates like X-ray view. So it's like a game. You have your level, you have your goals, you need to do a procedure, let's say to put a stent in the vessel, and instead of joystick or gamepad, you use wires and stents, you put it inside a body, and on the screen you can see how it moves inside the vessels.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and cool. And it has a feedback, so if you get to some, you know, wrong direction and you cannot move, you can see it on the screen and you can actually feel it, that you cannot move anymore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you can rotate and you see how it works.
And did you had any pre-medical knowledge before that?
No. Developers actually can work without medical knowledge because we had a good product managers who worked with real doctors, with our customers who ordering it.
Which technologies you used to create those?
So we didn't use some open source or external engine. It was our own sim engine. Mm-hmm. We don't know it. It was the company was created, I don't know, 22 years ago. So it's really old, and our game engine was like from old times, yeah, so it had lot of legacy code.
A lot of spaghetti code.
Yeah, spaghetti code. So basically it was C++, mm-hmm. because everything should be super fast. Mm-hmm. Also, we created our hardware, and it was probably done in C. I didn't work with hardware, mostly with the product. Mm-hmm. Yes, so
like, let's try to break it down to simple language. What we have mentioned first is that there was a game engine, running engine. So no matter what kind of gaming environment you're creating, you always need some kind of infrastructure that will be able to run your code, load it properly, and to make all those things, all the particles moving correctly. And yes, you're programming specific, like, I guess you programmed movements and geometry, how things will like deflect from each other. But to make all this possible, you should have some core part of the code that knows how to do all these mathematical calculations and rendering things. Correct?
Correct. Mostly in different games, people don't create engine by themselves. They just take the Unity or Unreal engine, and because it's easier and it doesn't require so much R&D effort to create all this stuff. But in case of Symbionics, it wasn't supplyable 20 years ago because there was not any engine that can support all particles, and so it's
right.
Now it's probably can be done, but to migrate to a new engine, it will take like forever.
Yeah, it's so hard. So engines are used in many places. In each of your browser, there is an engine that is responsible for rendering web pages. So all the developers who are creating front end, they're using different technologies. But what unites them is that all those pieces of code, they are running inside the browser, a common engine that knows how to execute those code over there.
So I heard that you're working in Meta, is that right?
Yes.
How did you get there? I think that our listeners want to hear about it.
Yeah, it's
also want to get there.
Of course.
So I applied to Amazon. I prepared to interview. I spent lots of time, and I got my first interview in Amazon, and I did it good. I thought it was good because I got the task, I solved the task, everyone was satisfied. So I thought, okay, so I'll have four more interviews and then probably offer, so I'm good. And then I got rejected.
Oh.
Yeah, and I didn't get any feedback, so I was just upset. Why? Because when you know why you're rejected, it's good because you can, do your homework and maybe apply in next year, etc. But that time I didn't get any feedback, but I was already prepared and I upgraded my CV. I applied in Meta, probably in Google, don't remember, maybe a few smaller companies. I applied on software 3D graphic developer role because I had some similar experience. And some recruiter called me, asked me a few questions, what I'm doing on my current job, what do I know? Of course, I said I know everything. Because, yeah, that's how
you should
it
say
works.
That.
Yes. And I got the first interview. It was pretty similar to Amazon interview. Next day, I got a call from different recruiter. I got a feedback that everything was amazing, that I passed this interview.
Nice.
And then I had to have on-site interview. And on-site interview, it's actually not one interview, it's 4 or 5 interviews. And when I received preparation material, when you apply to some fan companies, they always send you material to prepare. So even for first interview, you know what to expect. And everyone knows that you should do lead coding. Do you know what's lead coding?
Yeah,
it's like practice. And they send what you should prepare. You send even some coupons for courses where you can do lead code or system design.
Really? The coupons?
Yes, yes. And they send you a list with topics that you should know and more materials and some examples, video examples with interviews, how they do it in Meta, and yeah, so.
Wow, why they're doing that?
They just don't want to miss a good candidate because everyone comes from different industry, everyone don't know everything. So it's not, first you can choose any language that you want to write a code. So it's not like mandatory to know C++ or Python or Java. I knew C++ and I did all my interviews in C++, and interviewer was always excited because no one actually do codes in C++.
Nice. So you got this preparation list and...
Yeah, so I got a preparation list and one part of my next interview is supposed to be a specialization interview about 3D graphics. And it was some complex terms about rendering, forward rendering, ray tracing, etc. And of course, I said, yes, I know everything. I just heard it on my previous work, but... You should say you know everything just to try. And when I started my preparation for on-site interview, I was super upset because I actually didn't know anything. And it was like, oh, I can do 4 more interviews and then I'll fail on my 5th interview. So it's like wasting of time.
Yeah.
So I was honest and I wrote back to my recruiter and said that, sorry, but I think it's wasting of time for you and for me, and it's like a mismatch because I don't think that I'll pass this interview. And I didn't expect anything. I thought, okay, it will be cancelled, and that's it. My story ended. Maybe I'll try different companies. But they answered me same day. They even called me and said, okay, we can do like regular interview, not with specialization. So it will be same interview, but without this part, just for generic software engineer role. So, and I said, cool,
nice.
Good, I'm ready, for sure.
And how did it go?
So I took one more additional month to prepare because now I was serious. Because before, after I failed to Amazon, I didn't prepare for my Meta interview at all. So it was just shot in the sky. And for this month, I really hustled and tried to do lead code. And I did these courses that they sent to me. I prepared system design. I did few mock interviews with my friends.
Wait, but they give you the chance to take this gap between the interviews? Because one month is a lot.
When you want to do your
interview. Oh, wow.
And I say, okay, first I need to prepare. I see that these topics, I'm not good in system design. So can I have 2 weeks or 4 weeks? And they said, yes, 4 weeks is okay.
Oh, nice.
So I took 4 weeks to prepare. And afterwards, I had two more coding interview. And all tasks that I had there, it was a task from lead code that I actually did. So it wasn't, it was stressful because it's interview, but I already knew the solution, and it was just to show how you do actually coding, how you do test cases, how you think about edge cases, etc. So it wasn't hard, but it was stressful. And system design interview was also good, I think so.
If you're in Meta, probably yeah, it was good.
Probably.
What was it about?
It was, I don't actually remember, but it was something design search engine for posts for Facebook. And you should draw your these diagrams with databases and servers and how it works and how it scales, etc. But if you do some preparation, it's all about some big search engines or databases, etc., how Netflix works, how Twitter works, so, and it's pretty similar.
But it's only high-level design, right?
Yeah, it's only high-level design. And behavior interview was also, I thought it will be like in Amazon when they just ask you a question, tell me about your hardest project, and then you should show some good stuff that you did, etc. But it was more like, you know, day-to-day talk, like with friends, and it was super, unofficial. And after each interview, I get a feedback from recruiter, so it was super good because next day you have a call and you know how your interview was, and in comparing with Amazon interview, it's like a different world, and I think Meta interviews, it's super good, and they like take your hands and move you to the offer.
Okay, how many stages is it totally? Like phone call interview, first interview, and then five more? So?
Phone call, just phone call with recruiter, then screening interview, and then on-site interview, and on-site interview, it's like four to five interviews. So in total, it's six. It was six.
Six, and you did it in English, all of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You can do actually in Hebrew in Israel, but if you ask for English, no one say no. Yeah, it's not an issue.
Well, I'd like to discuss a couple of terms that we mentioned. First, like lead coding, let's talk about it again. This is a special platform that has a bunch of exercises. All of them are taken from interviews, and there's a place where you can log in and practice for technologies that you will be interviewed for. Next thing that we mentioned was rendering. Rendering is the process of like drawing or putting all those small dots next to each other, understanding how they will relate to each other, and basically it's like drawing from code into something you can see on the screen in the pixels. And next thing was mock-up interview, like interview simulation, when it's not a real interview, when you're asking one of your friends or a more experienced recruiter to interview you. So this is the time when you practice explaining your thoughts out loud, solving questions in front of somebody else to gain more confidence about the process and to be more prepared for the interview itself.
And also the high-level design, it's trying to design your program of how your components are connecting and communicating with each other without actually implementing it, only by the idea. So you got into Meta, you were very excited. And how was your onboarding in this big company?
In Meta, onboarding happens in a different way than in most of the companies, because in Meta we have bootcamp. In Amazon or in Google they had something, but not in that way, because Meta is super engineer-oriented company, and you should fit the culture. They propose you like a few even months to prepare for real onboarding to your real team. So first
few months to the bootcamp.
To prepare to work.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yeah, it starts your bootcamp. My bootcamp was there in Israel. because of Corona, but before, for all employees, they provided tickets to Menlo Park in California for 6 weeks, where you just chill out, study, etc. So it was super cool, but not for me.
For all the people who are like listening to our podcast and not seeing live, the jar of Michal just went down. Almost hit the table.
Yeah. So what is bootcamp? First, you have lots of different lectures with different Facebook. It was Facebook when I started, not Meta, Facebook employees. They explain how the things works, what the tool they use, how the engineering culture works. You have your like track what you should do, which lectures you should look, which task you should do, what to read, what to write, etc. And it takes probably you have your mentor, bootcamp mentor. It takes probably 3 to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's like first step. You start to do real tasks. Actually, we have a tool with the tasks for bootcampers, and you actually write a code, and someone from real team who proposes bootcamp task approve your code, and then you merge it to master, and then you can see your changes in production. Yeah, it's like nice. From second week. So, of course, it's some small piece of code that you can change or write test or something else, but you can already feel your impact.
Nice.
And from week 4, I guess, you start team selection. If you're not pre-allocated, you should choose your team, so you don't know where you will work.
Wait, did you said you should choose?
Yes.
Your team?
So if you're not pre-allocated, you should choose because you don't have a team. So you're just in bootcamp with bootcampers. No one of you don't know where they're going to work because in Tel Aviv we have like 25 teams.
Wow.
In Menlo Park, don't know, it's probably hundreds of different teams, different products, different technologies, different everything. And when you start a bootcamp, you kind of select your track. You can be a product or system, software engineer. I chose system to do a backend, but as a result, I got to product. How team selection works. In Meta, we have a tool with the jobs, and you can check which team are hiring. Mm-hmm. And you have all kinds of open positions with different levels. You can apply on your level or plus or minus one level. And then you should write to the manager, and all managers want you to hire. It's like in the US when colleges comes to high schools and try to get graduates. And you feel the same because all managers want you to their team, and you have one-on-ones where manager tries to sell you what's team doing, what you'll have, why this team better than any other teams. So it's not like you trying to apply to a team, a team's trying to get you.
Well, of course, after 6-7 interviews,
yeah. In the bootcamp,
you survived it.
Yeah, so it's super excited. Everyone does like 3-4 team selections. Mm-hmm. So in total, you'll have like four weeks bootcamp plus 4 weeks of team selection. So in total, like 2 months, you're like honeymoon before onboarding. So eventually I joined to Facebook Lite messaging team. It's a pretty small team in Tel Aviv, something around 20 engineers.
Pretty small team.
Yeah.
Like some startups.
Yeah, but it's like for whole messaging in Facebook Lite. Facebook Lite, it's also a pretty small team, I guess under 100 engineers, and it's a pretty big product.
Mm-hmm. So what is this product about? How Facebook Lite is different from Facebook?
Yeah, so you know Facebook app? it's a blue app.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty big app, and probably something around 100 megabytes when you want to install it. And Facebook Lite, it's a smaller version of this app, and it weighs only 2 megabytes.
Only two? Wow, it's like 50 times less.
Yeah, it's super small, and of course, it has less features and not so fancy, and our users, more data constrained users, it's not Europe or US users, it's more like Indians, Indonesia, South Africa, some all kinds of emergency. This app uses less data, less paid data also.
So how many users you have approximately?
Approximately, Facebook Lite has around 600 million users per month and around 300 million users per day.
But which kind of feature they do have in the Facebook Lite?
It's pretty similar. You have your feeds, you have messaging, you have place market, you have dating.
Oh, so you have the messaging
reels.
Also.
Yeah, it has a messaging.
Because Facebook, it's not only the Facebook app. You should download also the Messenger app, right? So Facebook Lite includes they both.
Yeah, it's together.
How much it knows about its users, if you can say?
I personally don't know how much because I don't work with user data, and we have a lot of privacy concerns because we cannot just log whatever you want. Whenever you do any feature, you should pass a privacy review, and some legal guys from US should take a look on your code, what you're doing, what you're logging actually. So it's super complex process.
Let's talk about it for a sec. Like, you have legal code reviewers?
So when you create a new feature, or even if you change a content on a button, it was update, now you write update Facebook Lite, you should pass a privacy review, because maybe you add new logs, or maybe you do some not legal stuff when you declare something that's not true. And and sometimes when you do a pull request, someone can just look on your code and ask you for this review. Everything that you do in your code should be approved.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic. Okay, so how much after all the reviews, how much still Meta knows about its users?
We know like how much messaging do users do per day, how many media they send, etc. But it's some global statistic just to know how your feature performs.
Anonymized data.
Yes. And
so you can't just go and read my messages if I'm
no. No.
And I can't ask you to read. Okay.
You can ask, but I can't read. It's super important for Meta to know all kinds of data, some global data, not user specific data, because any features that you're doing actually, it should improve a product.
Mm-hmm.
And first, before you launch a feature into production, you run a lot of experiments and you test a different content, you test a different designs, you test a different backend solutions. And if this feature don't make something better or even worse, doing some regressions, so it's not going to work, and why should it be in the product?
So how long it takes for you on average to deploy a feature from the moment you got it as a task till the moment you see it in the application?
What is the development cycle?
So first, about development cycle, because it's a super big company and a lot of developers works on features, it takes time to just to design a feature, because it's supposed to be supported on all products. And if you, let's say, wants to add stickers and you want to produce stickers, so other company other applications should know how to consume it. It means if you send a sticker in the Facebook Lite, and user in Messenger should see this sticker.
Right, you need to connect with Messenger. I forgot that.
Yeah, and it's not like a messenger. It's also web version of Messenger, mobile web version of Messenger, desktop version of Messenger for Mac OS, for Windows, you know. So it's a lot of different surfaces that consumes actually. So most of the features comes from Messenger because it's like a core product, and then you should be a consumer, and then you can be a producer of some content. It's hard to say how much it takes from idea to push the real production, but you have a big cycle of it. So first you need to design this feature, and if it's already implemented, let's say in Messenger, so it's easier for us. So you have like a small team who works on it. You have probably a few engineers, content designer, graphic designer. You do proof of concept that it should work. First you should do a privacy review, sometimes policy review, because if you want, for example, to do upgrade your app on Android, you have lot of rules that doesn't allow you do many things. So for example, you cannot update your app by itself. So if it's installed from Google Play, it should be updated through Google Play. And for these questions, we have a team who works with Google, and they ask, can we do it? If not, why we cannot do it, etc. So it's
so you have a team to just talk to Google.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That sounds like a lot of bureaucratic, no?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Like, just to try to before you start implementing, there are a lot of meetings you should do.
Yeah, so it's a lot of meetings, and when you got all approves, or you can actually start implementing it in parallel, but afterwards you can be asked to do some changes. For example, in content, you assume that this content is fine, but then someone says this word cannot be used, and you should change the content and request new translations for a content because we support like 300 languages and...
Wow.
Right, also translation. Oh no! And right to left, left to right.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's like a different
bottom
feature.
Also different alphabets, right?
Yeah. And for, let's say, for a button which says upgrade Facebook lights, in one language it can be short, in different languages it can be super long, so it can be should be optimized. Yeah. So it super depends on feature size. Something can be done like in 1 month, and something can be done in 1 year.
Wow.
So
yeah, something can be done in 1 month?
Yeah, some small feature can be done pretty fast.
Wow.
And some changes, minor changes, can always done super fast, and then you run experiment, and then you should wait at least 1 month to get your monthly impact on some changes, and then you do review of experiment. If everyone accepts it's a good feature and you do impact, so it can be merged to production and launch for everyone.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I'd like to clarify one thing. Nathan mentioned pull requests. So developers are writing code in parallel in different teams in different countries. And there is a single source of truth, a place where all code of all people should like merge together. And so the process of putting code of different people together, it's called pull request. There is a special process that is responsible for seeing the changes and approving them and making sure that the code that Michal wrote and the code that I wrote, they're matched together and they can work.
Okay.
Wow. So much work. And wait, how do you update your software if it can be updated only through the Google Market?
So we have a few channels how to update software, but mainly it's through Google Play Market. We have all kinds of sideloads where user can just download APK and install. And we know that in some countries users send APK by Bluetooth because it's data constraint, and one of your friend can download APK and then send to you, and it means that you'll not spend your data.
Right, yeah, I did it like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Somebody like downloaded the music or picture on the phone, and we used like Bluetooth or infrared. Okay, the world still grows.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so we got some understanding about difference between application Facebook and Facebook liked. Do you feel that users are also different, like in the way they're using application, some patterns, something that you have noticed?
Yes. So first, our users are super data constrained. Mm-hmm. So it means they don't have data to do updates, to see videos, to see photos, and we have all kinds of modes in Facebook that integrated with different carriers that provide free data. Mm-hmm. for like texting, nice. For example. Mm-hmm. And you can use all kinds of features. Second thing, our users are not technically wise. Mm-hmm. And it means some of them are children and they just want to see pictures. And some users can use, for example, different language, for example, English language, to show their friends and just for people that they're smart and they know English, but actually they don't. And
how do you know that they don't?
In Facebook, we UX research, it means that someone from Facebook or from our partners comes to different countries and they like do interview for our customers. We show them some new concepts, some features, and ask what do you think, why you think so, why you don't use this, why you use this, and probably from this research. Wow. And yeah, and our users, for example, afraid to do, some users, of course, not all of them, afraid to do upgrades.
Which kind of technologies do you use in Facebook Lite, if you can say?
Yes, I can say, and it's a tough part, because in Facebook we are using, not in Facebook Lite, just overall in Facebook, we use in-house technologies. So you know that Facebook does a lot of open source solutions. Mm-hmm. Like React, yeah. PyTorch, React Native, etc. And inside we use them and some different technologies, but not like technologies that people use in market.
Our everything is in-house.
In-house means, yeah. For example, we don't use a Git. We use a Mercury. It's a
Mercury?
Yeah, you don't know what is Mercury and no one uses Mercury. Yeah, but it's pretty similar to Git. We don't use Kafka. We don't use Kubernetes. We don't use Docker. We have all our own solutions. Yeah, and our main programming language, it's Hack. You probably don't know what is Hack. It's like a PHP on steroids.
I heard from Nathan before.
It's pretty similar to PHP, but more advanced version. Mm-hmm. And for example, for Android and iOS development, we don't even use, in Facebook Lite, we don't use React Native. We use our different solutions, our different frameworks, and no one knows them, so...
Once Facebook bought Instagram and WhatsApp, did they change the technologies as well?
Some technologies, yes. Some technologies, they like assimilated to our tech stack. Mm-hmm. But yeah, somewhere we use Java, regular Java, and Python, and C++ for infra, etc. But most our frameworks use in-house solutions.
And how did you manage to learn everything? Because I assume that you didn't learn all the technologies in 4 weeks of bootcamp, right?
Yeah, you actually face a new technology, each month, and you don't know anything.
Each month.
Super frequent, because you have a new project, and yesterday you worked with backend, today you work with frontend, and for frontend, for example, we have three different frameworks, and it's like changes all the time. So our new framework was introduced 1 year ago, and before it was something different, and now everything moves to this framework, and then you have different languages for scripts, and then it evolves in new versions, etc., and everything changes. Yeah, and I think it's one of important points that Meta don't hire by specific knowledge. If you're not if you're not specialized like on 3D graphic or machine learning, if you're just a generic software engineer, you should be just smart, you should learn quickly, and you should adapt.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter, because you have all those frameworks that you need to learn all over again.
That's the great insights.
Yeah,
I found that. So again, you should like learn quickly, you should be adaptable.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's all you need.
Great tips.
Thank you for sharing. There were a couple new terms that we have mentioned. So first was open source. Open source is the kind of code solution that was written by someone or a community of people and shared publicly to be used by other companies. So whenever you're writing the code, it either belongs to you or your company you're working for, or you're writing it for public usage and then everybody can take the whole code or its pieces mm-hmm. and use in their applications. React is a special library for creating user interfaces. Usually you see it in the web browsers. It knows how to plug itself into proper software that runs your code.
After all we talked about, can you tell us, like, in a summary, what are the benefits as a meta worker?
Sure. First, and I think it's most important for everyone, it's your compensation. Second, I think it's PTOs, that you have a lot of days for your vacations.
Oh.
In Israel, as I know, default value, it's like 14 days. Correct?
Yeah, I think so. 13, 14.
Yeah, and in Meta we have 24.
Oh, wow.
And we have also all kinds of holidays extra. And yeah, so it's
it is like you're working 11 months per year.
Wow, 11 months?
No, actually not, because you have always lot of work and you cannot spend all your vacation because you always have to work because it's super intensive. Yeah. And you cannot take all your left days to the next year. You can take only 5 days. So by the end of the year, everyone just takes everything that they can, and it's like a dead land.
Okay, so I see the strategy. So come work with us. We'll give you tons of vacation days, but also we're going to be super intense on
you.
Yeah,
you're not going to take even one of them.
Good luck taking them. Well, you can if you want, but you know, we're going to review.
But you won't take it. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, anything else?
We have a massage chair in the office.
Nice.
We have free food.
Amazing.
Yeah, we have San Pellegrino in refrigerators.
Okay, so that's nice benefits. What's the price for your soul? What are the challenges of working in Meta?
Okay, so first, it's super intensive. It's super competitive. You have to work a lot and you have to deliver a lot of impact. And you don't have a manager that says what you should do. Because in my previous company, we have a product manager that says, okay, we should do A, B, C, and you will work on A. And you will have a QA, and I will check in a few days what the status. In Meta, you work in totally different way. You're your own manager. You should find your scope. You should find your tasks. You should find what you want to do, and you should convince your peers why you want to do it, because you assume it will give your impact, not you, to the company. It's useful, it should be good, etc. So no one tells you what to do. From one side, it's good because it's like a freedom. From other side, it's a bit scary because if you don't know the scope, don't know the product, it's super hard to find something. And because everyone is competitive, it's also, you should, you know, to be the first who claim and besides that, I think tech stack, because it's all in-house solutions, so it's like less transferable skills, and you cannot use them outside of Meta. Some basic concepts, of course, the same. So in Mercury and Git, you use even same commands. Instead of Git push, you write HG push. So it's pretty similar, but yeah, you can write in your resume that you know Angular, because we just don't have Angular. Few times per year we have PSC. PSC stands for Performance Summer Cycle, where you should show all your work that you did for last half. It should include your impact, your engineering excellence, your direction, and your people axis. And you write a big doc about all your things that you did for half year. It's better to write during your work. When you did something, just write a note, because mm-hmm. it's hard to remember what you did and you probably missed something. And then you should ask a peer feedback from your peers, write peer feedback for your peers, write a feedback for your manager, and yeah, and then you'll have evaluation process, you'll get a rating, and maybe you'll get a promotion, because it's also based on your performance. And I know that in Meta it's the best company if you're promotion oriented, if you want to get a fast promotion and you're super competitive, you have a lot of time to work mm-hmm. and you're good to find do your work, then you can get a super quick promotions.
Nice.
Let's talk about evaluation a bit more. So I guess it's clear how like peer review and feedback is working, how they're measuring your productivity. Like,
yeah, so first, because no one controls you, no one knows what you're actually doing. You do inside Facebook, we have like a Facebook mm-hmm. where you do a post about your experiments, about mm-hmm. your bug fixes, about your funding,
like this
research.
Facebook group?
Facebook inside, like applications at the
Yeah, it's called a workplace. It's called a workplace, oh, and really? It's like a feed with different groups by projects, by everything, and you can post.
Oh, wow.
Wait, you understand? Like, it's like society inside society. So Meta inside yourself, like you're like a freelancer, you're choosing which kind of work you want to do for your life. Then you learn the language of this society. Then you're like freelance responsible for yourself. And then you're like doing, you have your own social media inside of it to talk to people like you, part of society.
Yeah, because at first I thought that you were talking about like Facebook group, not a whole workspace of Facebook, a whole app inside the app.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
So nobody controls you, how you get measured.
Okay, so as we talked before about what Facebook knows about users, it's some data, and this data can be measured. And for example, you add a new feature, let's say, new type of stickers, stickers with animation, mm-hmm. and you add them, and then you run experiments, A-B tests. One group has this experience, second group doesn't have this experience. And then after few weeks or months, you can compare how many messages were sent during this time, mm-hmm. how many users use stickers, etc. So you have all kinds of statistic, and this statistic is used for your performance review, for your impact axis. So in Meta you should always run a lot of experiments, and you should analyze. Sometimes you have if it's a big project, you have a data scientist or product analyst that works with you, and you check the data and you see how it can be improved. For example, for upgrades, we can provide a way to upgrade up from one source or from another source, and then you can compare which source works better. And then you can dip in the data and check for which groups of users it works better and for which it works less. And you iterate and iterate and iterate, you run a lot of experiments, you should collect all this data. If you do a good fix and you know that it's actually does something good, but you don't have an experiment, so you cannot claim that you actually did something.
Yeah.
One time you told me a story about the guy who fixed a couple lines in some code that was responsible for advertisement engine or something. And
probably it was how guy removed some old code, which did nothing but just wasted CPU time. Mm-hmm. And he eventually saved a few hundreds of millions of dollars per year, because we have a lot of servers and we have like billions of users. Right now it's like 3 billion per day.
Wow.
Across all apps. not only Facebook, but Instagram, WhatsApp, etc.
Yeah,
and if you do some small fix that in different companies, you can think that, okay, it will improve performance by 0.1%. It's like nothing. But on this scale, it can be like millions of dollars.
Well, I like this story because it shows that improvement is not always about adding things. Sometimes it's about removing things. Yeah. And it's a good illustration of it.
You guys technologies are using our in-house. How do you do that? Maybe you can give tips to our listeners.
I just a curious person what happens in AI, what happens in different fields. I do some courses sometimes, time to time, just just to be, you know, but it's I think it's harder in Meta to stay updated because most of our technologies are in-house.
Okay, very interesting. And what kind of advice would you give to any aspiring young developers or for those who want to work in Meta? Because your story is fascinating. Just to make it clear, in like 5-6 years, the guy who came to a new country just with degree, with no experience, is now working in Meta and performing there well.
Yeah, first, I think people thinks about FANG companies, like about some godlike companies and godlike developers, but actually everyone there just regular guys that don't have any special abilities. You just need to have a few strong skills that you can actually grind for a few months, lead coding, and to do some mock interviews, etc. It's nothing special.
I'd like to talk about a couple of things that we have mentioned. So first is FANG or FAMG. Sometimes this abbreviation stands for Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, or Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. And this is abbreviation of the top companies. Usually that's the Olympus, the place where all developers want to work. We also have mentioned database. Database is the place where all information that needs to be saved is stored. It's like a big computer that only saves information that is accessed by other applications. Any other advice you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think that you should be just brave and be curious. And if you fail once, it doesn't mean that you fail twice. And even if you fail 100 times, maybe on the 101st time, you'll succeed.
How the door to Amazon was closed to you, but you kept on looking for your opportunities and you got to Meta. So thanks for sharing.
Thank you for this interesting conversation. And thank you, Timo.
Thank you, Michal. We enjoyed it a lot. Guys, if you have any questions that we haven't covered in the podcast, please share them in the comments. We will have ability to read them, to answer to you, and we'll make sure to get back to you. Also, share your feedback if you want us to improve it, some specific thing in the future, or to highlight specific topic. We will listen to you. And don't forget to subscribe and like our content if you like it. If you don't do it. Like, no judgment. So stay tuned with us.
Bye.